Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's sunny, Saturday, had a ton of coffee, so you can tell like I'm super awake after five cups, because it takes me about that many to get here. Hey, real quick, man, where exactly in Toronto are you based?
I'm actually a couple hours west of Toronto.
Yeah, that's why I ask, because I realize like there's probably Toronto and then there's like probably like more specific areas there.
Yeah, so I live in a little town called Bayfield.
Okay.
Which is like about 1,000 people. It's a really tiny little town on Lake Huron.
That's not bad.
On yeah, the lake. So I spent many years living like in Toronto itself, but
yeah,
I had enough of pollution and traffic and noise, and now I live in a little cabin in the woods, and it's quiet, and I dig it.
That's idyllic, man. I hear you. It's nice to get a taste of like, you know, because I'm not like I'm in the same exact situation here in Denver. Like, we're really close to the city, but like at some point, it's really easy for me to pull the trigger and say, like, when I'm done, I have options. I can pick one of our many amazing mountain towns that are nestled away like within an hour, or if I want to hit like 4 hours away further up in the Rockies, I can.
Yeah.
So that's not yet. Cool. Not yet, though.
No. So you're in Denver.
Yeah.
That's cool. I drove through Denver once.
Yeah.
It's
pretty boring to drive through, to be frank. Like, it's one where, because you can take like, you know, one of our highways, our major one is basically a north-south that'll cut you through the city. Mm-hmm. So if I have anywhere dicey to get to, that's usually the one. But the main interstate we take is more the east-west, because we're usually going back east for some things, or we're going further west into the mountains for fun. So
I think where the way I came, because this is like about 7 years ago, I did a 1 month solo road trip from starting on Vancouver Island and down the west coast of the States, and just camped out. Stayed with a couple of friends down in LA for a few days, and then did across the States. So I drove through, it was in I went through Vail.
Yeah.
And it was in May, and there was a giant blizzard, and I had to turn around, and they closed the highway. I had to turn around and go back, found a little motel in some small town, crashed for the night, and then made it through the next day, and then drove through Denver and all that.
But tell you, man, that when you said May blizzard, it's like, that doesn't surprise me. We've had family come in it's like, hey, we'll stay for about 48 hours, you know, like weather should be good. And it was March, April, and it was just 6 inches of snow. They're like, yeah, no, can we stay with you a little longer? Yeah, yeah, sure. That's fine. So that's a pretty, it's a pretty section to drive though.
I thought it was pretty cool. Yeah, man. Speaking of coffee, that's the reason I was a couple of minutes late. Cause I realized I was out of coffee and I was just like, oh man, I'm not doing this without coffee. So I had to run to the store.
Oh my God. And I'm just thinking like, where I get Perplexed. So for starters, I have a dealer. They're in Camino Island, Washington. And so I have a regular shipment. So I basically never run out. I get close. It's like, I'm on my last cup. I better get my box today. Yeah. So I'm usually right on time, but man, like I will clown on a lot of people who are just drinking coffee after sunrise. It's like that's a pre-dawn thing for me. It might be just because I have children and I need like a, you know, I've been a black coffee drinker since 13. So this is a lifelong thing. So yeah, you can imagine like 50 years, you know, that's a long habit. I'm not 63, but nonetheless, it's like,
I was going to say, what's your secret?
What's my secret? Coffee. So, but it's like, I'm done by 7. I'm like, I was going to like almost leave something to spare, but I'm like, no, that's gone. So I got to furnish my other drinking habit now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man. So nice. We're good.
Right on.
That's a long answer to how you doing. So
no, dude. Hey, it's all good, man. That's what we do. Well, thanks. Just FYI, I am recording now.
Okay.
So thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Okay.
I don't know if you wanna take a moment to introduce yourself to the 6 or 7 people who listen to my show.
6 or 7. Well, you know, that's 6 or 7 for now, but I'm Hunter Hansen. And I also go by the Life Autistic because it's a clever name. And, you know, I will just say I was basically diagnosed with, you know, being on the autism spectrum at 16, right before I went to college. So great, great time in my life to where I'd been, you know, 2 years into holding down steady work, you know, as a teenager, working a full-time job. Kind of ridiculous. Wow. But then, you know, going to college from Iceland to Florida, so my life had a lot of interesting changes at that point. But no, by you know, by day I'm autistic. I'm employed by a large tech company, so I've had a pretty interesting and relatively successful career in my 12 years there. I live in Denver, Colorado with my wife and my 3 daughters, so I am kept very, very busy. But yeah, part of what I call like my long-term unmasking exercise has been just writing about my autistic experience. It was something that I had kept masked and hidden, obfuscated, and just buried behind like a suit of armor for years until kind of hitting like the nadir of, you know, professional and personal depression. And then I thought, you know what, why don't I just try being me for once and disclosing that in full. And then I remember it took I looked for a good name. I'm like, I need to find like a blog or something. And I remember Steve, you know, the Life Aquatic with Steve Steve Zissou. I think it was a Zissou, poor. Yeah. Like a Wes Anderson film that I'd seen once, but I liked the name of it. Went with that and then just started writing like my first episode. And I thought this is going to be stupid, but let me just like be cathartic. Let me just write about the experience. My trick was to just write out not all the content, but topics, just things that I could go to through, you know, my former life and like, and that's like the best thing I recommend for creators. If you want to get a project started, write out all your ideas, just barf them out. And I barfed out a lot. Yeah. I still have that list. And then I found out that like the Life Autistic continues. You add more things to it. Things happen. And it's like, shoot, I want to get to these evergreen topics, but then this thing happened and it's like, oh, I should write about that.
Yeah.
And that was the primary sphere of my advocacy. And then I don't know what finally clicked. I think it was another period of depression and upsettedness. And then I decided, hey, let's just do this, but by video instead, where I could narrate a little bit, add some color. Writing is my skill, but I had nothing to hide with video.
Yeah.
I'm all over my house, show off my kids. I don't get a chance to do my hair. And I've just found that
it's grown. So between that, between Instagram and other stuff, I kind of step back and think like, I'm literally, my only expertise is my experience.
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor. I'm not a professional, not a professional in autism, professional in other things, but just even discussing, this is what it's like. And I want to just justify the ways of autism to people who don't understand it yet.
Yeah.
And people seem to resonate with it, whether they're late diagnosed adults or they've been autistic and masking their whole life, or hey, my son's autistic and now they know it ain't a death sentence. It's just a difference. And so it's been, man, it's been wild, dude. I can just say, this is not what I imagined 5 years ago. It's not even what I imagined 6 months ago, but here we are, on we go.
Yeah. That's interesting. I've had sort of a similar, I guess, experience in some ways. Like I how old are you now?
Oh, am I gonna disclose this publicly?
I'm in, you my don't early have to
30s.
What's that?
I'll drop that hint. I'm in my early to mid 30s. And
okay, yeah, cool. So I just turned 45.
Well, you don't look it, so.
Well, thank you, sir.
Surprise.
Thank you, sir.
You're well.
And I just was diagnosed officially last fall, so at the age of 44. Self-diagnosed a year and a half before that, basically. Yep. So after a lifetime of A, not knowing, and then B, of course, masking because you're, just trying to survive. And then, so I, in my, process of research and learning and self-diagnosis and all that, I came to discover that there weren't really a lot of materials available for undiagnosed, late diagnosed, self-diagnosed adults.
Mm-hmm.
So then I decided to do this podcast to kind of just as a way to sort of leave markers along the path for anyone else who might be coming along this path behind me, just to, do that. And similar to what you just said, it has blown my mind. I just started recording just my random thoughts on my phone and posting them up via some podcast app. And I just discovered yesterday, I'm at 10,000 downloads now, which is
awesome.
Pretty exciting. I mean, it's not Joe Rogan numbers, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But it's just been really cool. The correspondence, and I'm sure, this is for you. It's the same thing times 10 or 20. Of just getting these messages from people all over the world, just going, wow, this is great. And so it's been really cool. And then also like having these conversations with, this other autistic adults and just sharing our experiences. It's been a really cool process for me, just like full of surprises.
I think and that's one where I see that in, I forget whether, I think it was this lady from Kenya, and I forget who it was, but it was somewhere. And I'm trying to piece together the details, but reading your enthusiasm about the conversations.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Joe Rogan numbers, and I obviously, as a creator, you can probably empathize, but I had to decouple myself from that because the things that I've found more joy in, it's not so much a numerical value. It's like the kind of comment that somebody says, hey, I've been wondering about this my whole life. Mm-hmm. Or I've had some profound ones, hey, you were like an answer to prayer, for me, understand my son. And so anytime I get upset or just discouraged about me thinking, I'm glad you mentioned the Joe Rogan thing, because there's always a bigger fish. And then I think what would I be happier with? Would I be happier as a 2 million subscriber YouTube channel, or knowing that I had that, or would I want just more of the good conversations, the connections, the people who feel like, hey, I can be openly autistic. Yeah. And then they go and do awesome things. They change their sphere. So it's I read the excitement when you talk about your guests, or when you share some of that stories, and I wish I could always tap into that essence more. So that stuff is, that's where the juice is at.
And it really is. Getting those notes, there's been a few that have really touched me too. And I've had a couple messages from people who, and it's funny that a lot of them kind of go the same way. It's like, hey, I just discovered your podcast. I just listened to like 10 episodes in a row. I had to write. I'm so like, thank you for doing what you do. Everything you're talking about is exactly what I've been feeling.
Exactly.
But didn't know how to express or describe. Yeah. And it's really helping me. And it's giving me like a little boost of like something, you know? And then also like talking to some people that, cause I'll often message back and forth with these people. And then I'll go, hey, do you want to come be on the show? And like a lot of times it's like, no. I don't feel comfortable or confident talking in front of people. But then they'll say, but that's why I love that you're doing what you do, because you are giving me a voice that I don't have. And like that, those are the messages that like I just tear up and I'm like, oh my God, because then like, I feel like I'm doing important work, you know?
And that's like, it's funny where, you know, obviously being autistic, when you talk about the emotional impact, the empathetic stuff, I'm like, I thought that was just reserved for normal humans. But then I find like it taps into a reservoir. I bet you get this word a lot, but growing up, I felt like I couldn't relate to anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, and a lot of my creation and work and stuff was like unrelatable. But since dipping into this, like that's a word people use now. I related to this. I found this so relatable. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm just some weird rando out here in Denver with kids just describing his autism. And then I realized, whoa, I'm not alone. And they're just clicking and realizing they're not alone. Yeah. And like, that is a powerful thing to move somebody from feeling alone to where they're hearing somebody else articulate a lot of their experience and validate it. And then it's like, I am not alone. And that's powerful. And like, I can't put a number value on that to derive happiness. It's just like, I make people feel less alone when they're autism.
Yeah.
That's amazing. It's a good mission. And it's cool that you like, I'm surprised that people would decline to speak about their experience, but I guess everybody just has a different on-ramp to like internalizing it and then discussing it. And that's, So if you are listening, like just talk, it's like your voice, like, you know, cause I was the same way and you probably were too, like reticent to share stuff with the world. And I still remember it was actually a Saturday when I recorded my first video. I didn't have a tripod. That's actually the only piece of equipment I have is my tripod. And it's this little thing. So it's basically an $11 squiggly thing. Yeah. And then my iPhone, and iPhones have pretty amazing cameras, but I remember using the props I used and it was just like, oh my gosh, I'm actually doing this.
Yeah.
And even though I've been blogging about it and talking about it, it just feels weird. But then if I can feel the weirdest and just break the glass and then tidy up afterward, cause I don't like spilled glass, then, you know, what does that enable for others?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a gift.
It is. And it's important. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, there's something really cool, like you said, about finding your tribe in a way.
Yeah.
Like I've talked about this before, but I went to the, like a year ago, I live in the middle of nowhere, but you know, an hour and a bit away is the next sort of city. And a friend of mine told me about a support group there for autistic people. And I showed up to a meeting one time, and I still remember the first day I went, and it was like just being in a room full of other autistic people. And it was so emotionally powerful for me to just sit there and go, okay, I was still masking quite a bit because I didn't know how not to at that point, but I kind of felt like a few cracks starting to happen in that mask. Like, okay, I'm not able to do it yet, but I'm going to be able to feel comfortable here. And it was just, you know, I described it to other people. Like it's like, if you were everyone around you is 5 feet tall and you're 8 feet tall and you've lived your whole life just being tall. And then all of a sudden you go into a room one day and there's all these other 8 feet tall people. It's like, you're just like, oh, okay. Like you just suddenly meet other people that, you know, share that particular thing that, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's interesting,
as you're saying that, I was like almost inverting it, just thinking like there's a different, being 8 feet tall would be kind of cool. Right.
Like, because I was inverting it, thinking like, if I were 5 feet tall among 8 feet tall people,
yeah,
I would definitely feel diminished and less, and like,
yeah,
find other people who are of that height. I can see that. But what's telling about that example, you know, I've never, you know, like, it's funny because like I can like fluctuate my weight, but I can't do my height. So it'd be nice, yeah, to say like, you know, I got really healthy and fit, you know, and I got up to about 8 feet tall at one point rather than got down like, you know, whatever weight.
Mm-hmm.
But you think about like the challenges that people wouldn't anticipate.
Yeah.
Being tall. I'm not going to disclose my height. I'm not super tall, but I'm tall enough to where some things are just, they're a bit of a gripe. So yeah, my children, they'll drop things,
yeah,
repeatedly. And it's like, okay, I don't like having to pick these things up. If I were shorter, this would be easier, but I am not shorter. I'm taller. So for every advantage that I have, like, and I think autism parallels that, like, for every random arcane fact I remember to where it's not difficult, it just doesn't tax me mentally.
Yeah.
You know, the equivalent is like, hey, I can reach tall shelves and stuff, but there's other hidden challenges. Like, wouldn't it be cool to be tall? Yeah. Try getting on an airplane.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, you know, hey, quote unquote, high functioning autistic, like, oh, that just means it's autism light. And no, it doesn't. You know, it's like, you're basically just good at memorizing things. And it's like, yeah, well, try explaining anxiety when you're making a phone call. Like,
that's
stupid stuff. Like, to me, it's like, I shouldn't be stressing over this. I shouldn't be stressing over the, like, having to clip my nails and thinking that that activity needs planning and structure. Like, so there's all kinds of weird assumptions that, you know, autistic people, especially those with different types of support needs, greater independence, like, you don't see it. You think like, hey, you're 8 feet tall, you can reach anything, you can dunk without having to jump. Yeah, but try finding shoes that fit. Try going into people's houses, try getting comfortable in a chair, you know. And there's like all kinds. So anyway, not to over unspool that example, but that's,
yeah,
I think that's actually a better one, you know. Like, it's like being 8 feet tall and everybody thinks it's cool, you know, but they don't realize this is a challenge.
Yeah. So,
but
what,
maybe they'll get that tall one day.
Maybe. On that topic, is that something you would like to talk about, like challenges that you face and support that you need in your life?
Ooh, man. So that's almost like, how long do we have?
we could always do a part two and three.
Part two. So part 12 with Hunter, you know, we're talking about challenges in, wait, we're still in second grade, Hunter. What the hell? What the heck, in case you need to edit.
No. This is an adult show.
Okay. Okay. All right. Cause
language is fine.
Oh, all language. Okay, I'll use a little Icelandic then if it gets really, really dicey.
Nice.
That, I think, is probably, that's one of the topics to where sometimes you are just given that voice, right? You look at like the quote unquote other autism advocates / influencers, and the way someone put it is like, you vibe with different people a different way. And I'm like, vibe is like, I'm like, oh, you're using the verb form. Okay, I'm old, so I need to remember that, you know, vibe is a different thing. My passions are more of like, we're at an arena of being an autistic like professional, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, people, you know, in the neurodivergent spectrum, to where the challenges are a little more real and closer at hand. Like, I'm having trouble maintaining life. How am I supposed to find work? I have a lot of difficulty with independence, executive function. And that's a real challenge. I face some elements of that, but I might not exactly vibe with somebody like that who struggles to, you know, keep everything down. Like, I do too, but the reality is I have a home. I am married. I have three children. I do drive poorly, but I do. And there's a lot towards like, it may look like I don't have similar challenge, but then you flip the script on, hey, Hunter, you know, I struggle in my career and at work, and I feel ostracized because I don't have the kind of social capital and grace to where my abilities really stand at the forefront. And like, you have a whole glut of people who are, and I'm not saying it's a ton, but like, there's a segment of the autistic population who is very overemployed. They do very well, but they struggle just from, you know, having to mask, but yeah. still like playing the political game, et cetera, and trying to figure out how that works. And so it's almost like a different category to where like some advocates can't quote vibe with that. Like I've never been at a company for 10 years at this executive level, trying to manage and advocate. Like it's a certain complexity. So kind of going back, like that's, you know, taking it out of that smaller sphere and more into the wider sphere. Like there are a ton of autistic people who have been unheard and underrepresented because in the United States, I think the autism narrative is from parents and children.
Yeah.
The children are the autistic ones. And when they grow up, they disappear.
Yeah.
And you never hear from them until we churn out more autistic kids.
Yeah.
And you think about like where, you know, and like we could probably come around to that because I don't know. And I'd assume it may be different in Canada. I'm not sure. But in the US, like, it's like the narrative is basically driven by parents supporting autistic children.
Yeah.
Or, oh, it's an autistic adult who is a savant or has savantism. And it's like, oh, then you think like, oh, it's like it's Temple Grandin or it's others who've been well supported.
Yeah.
And you get kind of like the, I don't want to say silent majority, but you do get like a ton of other autistic adults who quote unquote function, are representative of different types of needs that allow for greater independence, but basically run aground. So it's, and I think like where this really came to a head for me is just, you know, it is easy for me to try to do my way out of problems. Like, oh, I don't have to, you know, I don't have to work on being as kind and saying the right thing in every situation because I can just rehearse every conversation.
Yeah.
Never say the right thing or never say the wrong thing. I can just never make mistakes. So that way my worth as a person will be secured and people will overlook my weird autistic tendencies because I'm a super doer. And you can already see like, Hunter, that's a recipe for burnout. And I can raise my hand and say, yes, it is, because this is what autistic people do. This is the kind of like hidden struggle to where we are very well aware of, if not our autism, our difference.
Yeah.
And knowing that we don't want to stick out. We just want to stand out, but it's hard to stand out without feeling like we stick out. So there's a lot of that complexity that's just, you know, I think we're part of a, like the last generation of like autistic adults who are going to quote, wake up to it as adults. Mm-hmm. Like you think about 10 years, like parents are getting more woke about it. It's the narrative is changing and it's like, and I'm hearing it now. Like, I don't know any other autistic adults. I don't know any other mothers who are autistic as well.
Yeah.
So that's the start. But you think about where the narrative's going of like, oh, children don't grow out of autism. Autistic children become autistic adults.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And then I feel like it's just, it's, I did a video called like the future of autism. And that's like one of the more optimistic things. It's just changing the landscape of understanding and awareness. And I think the last thing I'll kind of tie off is there's people have gotten up in arms about this Sia. I don't really know how her name is pronounced, but film. Yeah. So they're like, I know it's like, I'm blissfully ignorant. I'm unwoke to this, but I'm thinking like my advocacy isn't so much invective against her misguided approach to it. It's more of, when somebody's in a job interview and they're nervous as all hell and they end up using a $10 word, polysyllabic or whatever, I want that interviewer to like stop and think, not, hey, this person used a word I don't understand. They're probably arrogant and snobbish and I don't like how they're going to interact with my team. And, you know, if they're trying to show off like this, I'm advocating where that person's going to stop and think, hey, you know what? I know something about neurodivergence. Some people on across different neurodivergent spectrums may choose a word that they like for a particular quality that best expresses the specificity of what they're trying to convey. It's not a flex. They're not trying to show off. They're not trying to stand apart and not be a team player. This is just who they are. Let me continue listening. That's what I'm shooting for, you know, because that is going to help elevate, you know, one's livelihood, professional achievement, the ability to build independence. Dude, that's a long game, but you know how autism is, man. I mean, we're focused and it's like, I can hang on to this for a while. It's like, I ain't going to get bored. You know, my ADHD symptoms, like I can flit to some stuff, but this one, man, I'm sinking my teeth in. Like we'll get there.
Yeah. And it's a routine for me, which means I'm just going to do it in perpetuity. So
nice.
Anyway, so you asked if I wanted to speak to that. That's, yeah, that's kind of my intro to my intro there.
Yeah. No, that's cool. That's, I appreciate that. I mean, that's, yeah, it's interesting. Like, I don't know, you touched on a lot of things there that I could get into, but yeah, it is. I do find that interesting. Like you talked about, sorry, I'm just thinking about like 16 different things you mentioned all at once, and I'm trying to decide, figure out where to go with it.
Like it's a large menu. It's like, you know, I'm sure of the 16, like there's 10 that are so, maybe three that are right, but I'm with you, man. Like we can pick and run with one.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I hope to do with this podcast too, is, you know, we talked about you know, getting those messages from other autistic people going, like appreciating it, but I also for non-autistic people to learn a bit, which is really interesting. And
yeah,
we talked about that, like that person who's conducting that job interview and it maybe is a little more educated or sensitive around these topics to, you know, God, man, you also gave me a little bit of a bit of panic there. Cause I mean, job interviews for me was something that I was always just so horrible at and just so, it's like just terrible at job interviews to the point of, it's just like, I never understood. I always did it wrong. I always fucked it up and I'd always walked away and didn't get the job and just never really knew why.
Yeah.
And it's such a, I feel like now I would be, if I was in a job interview now and was feeling like my autism traits being very present in me, I feel like I would even be a little more empowered to just say that straight up to somebody, as opposed to like trying desperately to hide it and like breaking out into a full body sweat or something like I normally used to do.
Yeah. And even like that bit, like it's almost like an anti-masking thing to where you, instead of actively trying to suppress it, like you find ways to open it up and infuse it a little bit into the process. And I found that, like, bizarrely, without saying too much, I interview a lot. I have interviewed people. I have also been interviewed. Recently had a you know, opportunity within my company to where I went through 10 interviews.
Yeah. I saw your post about that.
Yeah. Didn't get it. So, yeah. But I tell you, like, the comic tale about it that I love in, like, you know, kind of looking through my autistic lens, one, makes a great story.
Yeah. Yeah.
10 months or 10 interviews, 4 months, didn't get the job. Like, that's a good, and I love the fact that it's its own narrative now.
Yeah.
And I get like enthusiastic about it because I have a lot of these stories. But two, man, it was good practice. It was good practice. And I realized, like, this was a first for me because I would just casually disclose it and like weave it into the thread to where I'm telling you a lot about myself, but I'm not doing it awkwardly. And I don't know whether that's just the fact that, dude, I have practiced a lot of interviews. It's one to where you just do it. And it's like, it's never easy, but it is practiced. And just even something casually to say, like, you know, like even leaning on what you would call an autistic tendency, or, you know, it is, you know, like, I don't know whether it's my autism or what, talking, or like finding ways to like balance, like, you know, I've got like this certain autistic hyperfocus into XYZ project, you know, but then if I need to get others to get on board, here's what I'll do. So like finding ways to give that as a, this is still who I am. This is still where it shapes my abilities.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I've broken a little bit of that. And then I just discuss, you know, how I approach stuff these days though, man, it's all stories. I just try to tell a story, try to make it interesting, because that's a little bit of like, I don't know if it's an autistic tactic, but it's an observation to where, one, having been an interviewer, I realized that they all blend together unless somebody tells you a story, and then it's different. You know, so this can't be the interview advice blog or podcast, but I will say, like, and I still do this coaching. It's like, if you just tell me how you're going to do it, I'm going to get a copy of that from just about everybody who can furnish a workable answer. But stories are unique and individual. It's almost like, I don't know, like
you know, in the New Testament. Like, that's why a lot of the wisdom was dispensed in parables, because they were stories. It wasn't, hey, here's the fable, here's the moral, here's what to do. Let me tell you about a guy who owned a vineyard and he sent his servants out and they came back beat. And you're already like hooked into the details. And then when you start throwing in names in the mix and it's like, you know, and then this one senior manager, Dave, I mean, this guy, his good days were bad days. Came in, he had coffee down on his shirt. The first person he looked at was me. My computer wasn't turning on. I was already 3 minutes late. And like already right now, you're a little bit hooked, wondering like, what the heck's happening? Is this even real? No, it's not. Because you know, I haven't worked in person on site in a while. But like, those are the things that get to people. And I realized, oh, if I can just frame these to get to like how humans understand skills and narratives, then I can do that autistic thing where you rehearse a story, where you write out literally every single question, and can I relate this to a story? And if I'm betting against, you know, their ability to come up with questions versus mine, those are even odds for me, and they have been. That's like I said, at 10 interviews in, and you know, maybe I can refine it and, you know, actually, you know, get a different gig. But it's like, it's nice to be able to do that, but even that is hard, because it's, again, it's an awkward situation. It's awkward for neurotypicals, but then when you look at like, why is it awkward for me being autistic? And then when you mention like the cold sweat of, I don't even want to reveal who I am, when the whole purpose of the interview is so that they can get to know me better.
Yeah,
like that paradox, man, it's excruciating. So like, even that dialogue, man, 5 years from now, like, I want the people on the interviewer side who are actively trying to be better interviewers to, like, I think you said, like, to learn and to get wiser, and I think just more understanding.
Yeah.
Like, this is a tense situation for autistic people or neurodivergent people in these different ways.
Yeah.
Here's how you can still draw out their skills, their personality, and kind of break through the nervousness of an interview veneer to better understand them. And then, you know, hey, maybe we just need more examples of, hey, I'm autistic, I'm very successful in my career, my interviews always had me shaking, and I wore dark shirts so that they wouldn't see me sweat through it. That's my one tip. Let me share the rest. And then, you know, when they see like, oh, hey, I want great talent, I want great autistic talent.
Yeah.
But this is how I get them. You know, again, that's a long game, but somebody's got to play it.
It is. And I think like, there's something too about just kind of like normalizing it, you know, like I'd like it to be, like, if you went in a job interview and you just said like you were dyslexic or something, they just go, okay, cool. So now we just know, like, you might have spelling mistakes or, you know what I mean? Or something.
Like different accommodations.
Like, might take you a little longer to read something. And, but it's not going to like, it's not a thing people would get uncomfortable around. If you tell somebody you're dyslexic, they're not going to be like, oh, that's, I'm uncomfortable now. And I think it's with autism, it's, I've noticed in the last 2 years of me disclosing this to people, it sometimes makes people really uncomfortable because they all of a sudden they sort of back away. Like, I don't really know what that means. I don't know how to relate to you. And now do I, and now I'm going to start acting weird with you. And I'm just like, no, just keep being normal. Like, it's fine. It just, I want you to know I'm autistic, and I want to be able to explain to you if I'm struggling with things. Like, you know, I have, the job I'm at now is the first job I've ever disclosed it to my employers. And, and it was just, just trying to explain simple things like, hey, when you're asking me to do things, I just need it to be really, really clear. I don't, if there's like gray area about who's doing what, like, that's really confusing for me. Like, because sometimes like a certain job I'll think is my job, but then someone else starts doing that. And I just go, okay, I don't understand. Am I still supposed to be doing this? Should I stop doing this now? Like, I took a week off and then you started doing this job, but I had already set it up so that no one would have to do it while I was gone because I did it in advance. So now I'm confused. So it's like those kind of things where I just want them to understand, you know. And I said to my boss last year, I just said, you know, like, There could be times when you're going to explain something to me that in your brain, like, you could not have said it any simpler, but I'm just not going to get it.
Yeah.
Because the whatever words you used in the order you used them just didn't make sense to my brain. So I'll have to ask you again. I'm not asking you to say it louder. I'm not asking you to enunciate it better.
Yes.
I'm not asking you to say it slower.
Or say
I'm
it slower.
To,
yeah.
I'm asking you yeah, to like, exactly. I'm asking you to take the same thought you had and figure out a way to state it in a different way and see if that way clicks for me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, it's just asking for a little bit of patience and a little bit of like workarounds, you know.
Yeah, but it's like just combinations.
It's, it's funny having these conversations though, because sometimes it's like, I don't know, it's it can be sort of comedy at times.
It's one where, and people go back and forth on like this disclosure thing, and some people it for like, I don't want to say, hey, yeah, just disclose it, because you just may not be in a safe place in your workplace or your personal life to where you feel like you can articulate. Like the language I like using, and again, like divorcing this from specific company context, but just general workplace, is just like accommodation. Like what you described, it's not a way to highlight your deficiency. It's a way to help amplify and help, like, you know, a company or an employer or even a coworker better understand where your needs can be met to like unlock your best work or. Yeah. Like I love that language, because even just the whole, when somebody's like, if you can't make it any clearer, I'm like, you know, $5 says I can make it clearer.
Yeah.
Once I, you know, it's like, do you really want to challenge me on that? Like I, my wife, she is unendingly patient, but the phrase is autistic level of specificity, to where there is no ambiguity.
Yeah.
Like, hey, if she'll call downstairs, hey, what's this? My pat answer is, this is a pronoun. You got to be more specific. Is it a spill? Is it something in the toaster? Is it, you know, or even like locating clothes? I have a certain directional way of asking. Like, you know, I'll start it like for Jody, my youngest daughter, I'll just ask, do you have a preference on what bow she wears today? If it's yes, then I know, okay, which bow would you like me to get? Then it's okay, get this one. It's this texture. It's in this basket over here. And if it's not there, like, that's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
I usually want to hear, no, I don't have a preference. Good. I'll just pick one out and I'll do my best. So rather than me jumping to the need of, oh, she needs a bow, and then assuming that just because she needs a bow doesn't mean I can pick the one that in her mind had a certain match with that outfit. So even home accommodations are fun, but it's like, dude, it's totally true. And I feel like that's the, like even with like the dyslexia thing, like as obviously, because I've interviewed people before, in my mind, I don't think, oops, they can't read and I can't do this. It's no, they may struggle with following written instructions in certain environments. Mm-hmm. When I'm stressed and I have somebody yelling at me and I'm trying to read through documentation, I'm going to struggle because I'm processing this stressor, and that stressor directly affects my, you know, my dyslexia. And I'm not an expert in it. I don't know how it works, but I can imagine, oh, hey, this may have varying levels of need. Or if it's crucial, I prefer to have information communicated verbally and then reinforced or ample time provided. Like, hey, I can read these directions, but I'd like you to accommodate me with greater time to get through it and comprehend it. And then it's, but see, Ryan, that's predicated on one's understanding of dyslexia. I mean, mine is imperfect. But I know that, like, hey, these are some possible things. You throw out autism. And like, you get, what's the preconceived notion? Then it's like, uh-oh, is this person a robot? Why can I not invite them to social gatherings? Are they going to freak out if I try to surprise? And then it's just it's like, it's lack of knowledge. It's lack of understanding and it's not ignorance. It's pre-enlightenment. You don't know what you don't know. And that's why I'm, like I said, I think we're both in the sphere of taking people from pre-enlightenment to, you are now enlightened about what autism really means and where you can better accommodate autistic and neurodivergent people. So process for sure. But it's like the recoil on that. I just, it's I, some people really don't play well into that stereotype, and then others, it's just, it's unfortunate, but at least the way I look at it, with a lot of furor over how autism is portrayed, at least it makes an easy target, you know, because then I can say, hey, you know, like this one character who is portrayed as autistic. Okay, now that you have something I can work with or work against, it's like, let me tell you what it's really like. I am not going to memorize everything you tell me and then fail to tie my shoes. I can tie my shoes well. I can actually tie them to where they won't become unloosened, because there's a special trick that I used and read online to where I can just leave them laced and they don't unlace unless my daughter unties them. And see, now I'm over specifying how I know how to tie a shoe. It's a cool trick. But then also, like, just say, like, hey, it's not that, you know, just because I remember many things doesn't mean I can always be counted on to be like eidetic or photographic. So like, you need to know that, hey, Hunter, when supported, and I saw this on LinkedIn, it was beautiful. Like, this one lady is like, my one brilliant friend, when her needs were met, did brilliant things.
Yeah.
Could just articulate. She was lucid. When her needs were not met, she fell apart.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that's it.
Yeah.
When my needs are met and I have clarity, I have, you know, support, and I am forgiven for mistakes, and I'm understood, and people take the time to understand that when I respond quickly and briskly in the negative, it's not rudeness.
Yeah.
It's, hey, maybe I should have front loaded this with Hunter to say, hey, this sounds like something you'd say no to, but I've got some details that might make it enticing. Want to hear? Like, whoa, you just gave me agency into saying no. Two, you kind of asked about my bandwidth in a way, and you understand that I'm going to try to think ahead. And that's like, that's what I want. And then I can do great things. But when it's, you need to do this, and I don't know why it's difficult. And then it's like, okay, now I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
And I want to undo that. So, yeah.
Totally. I found like things you got me thinking about something too, that like I've found in the last year, just with learning about, you know, how my brain works and everything. Like, you know, I have an example of, like, my mom, for instance. Like, we're close. Mm-hmm. She lives 5 minutes from me. I see her a couple times a week. You know, she comes over. Well, she comes over and, like, watches my kid sometimes if I need, you know, which is great. But it's like, it's funny. Like, my mom is one of these people who speaks in code and never says what she means. Mm. And is always, like, hinting at things or being sort of not passive aggressive, but like she'll be indirect, trying to ask you something, but not ask you, but she wants you to just arrive there.
Yes.
And make it as if she wasn't asking, and you just, and it's, intuit I've found it, somehow, it my entire life. I have found it like endlessly frustrating, and it's been empowering and better for our relationship. Cause I used to just get so grumpy at her and just I was just like, fuck, you're so annoying. But I didn't know why I felt that way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now I'm in this place where I've been able to explain to her, I'm like, you can't hint at things. You can't beat around the bush. I'm not going to read between the lines. Just tell me in the most direct, literal, precise language you can, what it is you're trying to say or ask me. And if you're trying to, like, you know, people try to like, it's like they try to make a game of it and they think it's fun to like beat around the bush and like they think it's cute or something, you know? And I'm just like, that shit is not cute to me. That shit is fucking annoying. But it's been good for our relationship to be able to do that. And sometimes now when she just starts talking to me in code or something, and I just look at her and I just go, I don't understand what you're saying. I'm about to get grumpy at this conversation. I need you to just be direct and tell me what the fuck you're trying to talk to me about. And it's, we can sort of laugh at it, which is good. And it's been better for our relationship. And I think having that, like, getting to that place for me of like knowing that that's what I need, and knowing that instead of just getting pissed off at people and just being able to go, okay, this isn't working for me. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what game this is, but I can't play it. So just tell me what's up.
Yeah.
You know? And she was trying to, like, my birthday was last month, and she was trying to, they had an idea for a present for me, but she was trying to like ask me these obscure questions to see if it was to like get hint at this present. Ooh. And I was like, I don't know what you're doing right now, but it's driving me nuts. You got to stop.
So the question to that is, did they end up inferring what kind of present you wanted, or did you eventually spring the trap and say, like, hey, like, are you like, what are you trying to figure out? And was it like, what do you want for your birthday? Like, if you want to know what I want for my birthday, just ask.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I've even told people, like, my joke is I'm a no surprises guy. Like, don't even surprise me on my birthday.
Yeah.
I just don't, I would rather, it's rare that I am very pleased and happy by a surprise. And it would have to be something to where I have, I've been very open about it and open about like, I don't have this and I want it. But it's rare, but my expectation is not to be surprised.
Yeah. You know?
I think it's, and like what you mentioned, it's that whole, the grammar of understanding where people want to speak to elicit intuition and where you just know my lack of intuition is not due to any indifference. It's due to difference. Good example. So we're recording this in March. I just got done cutting an episode about autism and rudeness. And boy, I tell you, I enjoyed it. And that's what makes it for me. No matter how a video performs, I've told myself if I enjoy making it, I enjoy editing it, if I enjoy doing the scene work, and if I enjoy making the thumbnail, I need to lock that away. Because at the end of the day, somebody might not like it. It might not get a ton of views, impressions. Like I can go through all the metrics that would say this is a failure, but I want to look at stuff and think, I had so much fun with this. And it's good, but that one, that topic of, you know, literalities, but they also the topic of these like assumptions that we can all that we all have the same level of intuitive capacity.
Yeah.
And where this is another one of those quote unquote, you know, autism struggles when you do have, again, different support types. Yeah. If you are good at piecing together patterns and you have demonstrated that throughout your life, it's almost illogical to some people. It's like, how can you figure out complicated puzzle X, can't figure out that I wanted a second cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And then it's like, then it's difficult because you add an emotional component and then people get upset. And you've mentioned like you get upset and kind to where like, hey, I am somebody speaking a different language. They're speaking Portuguese and expecting me to hear it as Spanish. There are some mutual intelligibility. Like there does exist some mutual intelligibility between, you know, like Spanish, Portuguese and others. But if you're speaking one, expecting them to, for you to pick it up in your native language, which is, you know, Portuguese or whatever, then there's friction and then there's emotion. And then there's, what is that? It's anger. And then it's frustration. And then what does that go to? This person is, they're not different. They're indifferent. And like, that's one of those, again, let's unbox that. Like, hey, we're not being rude. We're not lacking an intuition due to indifference. It's that we just don't know what game you're playing. To that end, though, then I realize sometimes people bring out the board and I'm trying to figure out like, oh, you've brought out a certain board. It's either chess or checkers. Mm-hmm. And so there's like things that I have done to almost build that in as like a, like an adaptive capacity, like a really good one that I've just like a really good one. And I'll share this because it, a lot of people ask about like autism and relationships. They're like, when are you going to do the wife of the life autistic? I'm like, when she wants to.
The wife of the life autistic.
I'm not. And I mean, bro, like you mentioned kids, right? So like there's other dynamics that like, it's like, hey, I told my wife, like whenever you want in, let me know. And we'll talk. But like one thing that happened was just her mentioning how frequently our youngest daughter would, let's just say, do unseemly things to her diaper on like a certain recurring shopping trip. And I didn't realize that she was mentioning that as a way to lay the groundwork of urgency and elevate that to where, Hunter, I care about this and I want to be cared about in this regard. And I had to like, it was a tough day because I dropped the ball, but I had to realize I want her to accept me for who I am, but I need to accept her for who she is as a neurotypical with a different mode.
Yeah.
So what I did was like, we had it out. Yeah. We ended up throwing that day in the trash. But since then I've realized my autistic attribute of hyper-focus and place of being at work, I don't let it get interrupted because I don't care about people around me. It's because I have a routine that says I need to focus on work unless some other extant catastrophe is going on around me. Yeah. If it doesn't reach catastrophic levels, then subconsciously I'm not going to undo the airlocks, put on my spacesuit and get there. Yeah. So what I did is like, I just created like a simple routine reminder to where I still care about her. I still care about our daughter and like ruining her car seat and all that. I do, but I need something to where even in my line of focus, it floats back into my view to say, aha, I need to express how I feel in this moment at this time. I do care, but I just need it to get back into my routine to do it. And like even describing it sounds robotic, but it's not. It's me working against myself and I'm like adapting it a little bit.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, Ryan, since then, she's almost been an angel in terms of, you know, keeping her nappy clean. So it's almost like maybe that's the trick. I just need to ask more about this. And I think that's the other, like, I think in the negative sense, it can make it look like, hey, we autistic people need to be the ones to bend. But I think it's more of there's understanding's a two-way street.
Yeah.
And I can understand, like, neurotypical people I think can better understand each other naturally.
Yeah.
And I think just exploring those differences of where, hey, you need to understand that my office is like an airlock. I close out and focus out because when I'm at work, I'm at work. I get my best work done here. I'm not trying to shut you out, but I also need to understand your needs of, you know, this is a jarring event for you. It is the worst part of your day. Yeah. I need something that where we can come together. And I've learned that, dude, relationships are work, period. Yeah. They just are. Yeah. Even between two neurotypicals, when you get the neuroatypical and, you know, neurotypical people together, it's I'm still learning and I want to be pliable and I want to learn where I know who I am, but also what can I do differently to where I can still be me, but I can do a different thing and, you know, help expand the borders of grace, as I call it. So yeah that's now I'm trying to think, what were we talking about? Now all I can think of is diaper explosions and,
you know, stuff. I think you started with your video about rudeness.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I can't wait later in March.
I'm looking forward to seeing that one. Cause I find that's something that I've been actually thinking about, a lot in the recent weeks and in the last couple of months, even. It's just, as I continue this process of unmasking and just allowing myself to be my authentic autistic self, I do find that sometimes if I do sort of slip into that robot mode where my answers are short and my tone of voice is probably a little bit severe, and I don't mean it to be, but I'm just I'm thinking, I'm focused, it's just like And then I can perhaps, not perhaps, I definitely at times forget that I'm speaking to humans. And I've certainly caught myself a few times going, oh, I think I'm probably being perceived as kind of an asshole right now. And it's not, you know, maybe that's also a bit of paranoia or overthinking, but you know, it's like that's the funny thing about being us, I think sometimes is, you're interacting with people, but you're always kind of have this thing running at the same time. It's like, am I doing this right? And as you go through, as I've been going through this process of unmasking and letting myself just be me, I in the last couple of months I kind of go, oh, I think I've turned, you know, pushed one of these knobs on the big mixing board. Like maybe I've let one go a little too high and I need to bring it back a bit because I think these people are looking at me like maybe I'm being a jerk right now.
It's a weird, like you mentioned this because there's a topic of, you know, cause I've done one video and I've heard a lot of people talking about masking and I think it's helpful to articulate where and how we do it. But then it's, you know, the season comes about like, hey, take off the mask, unmask. And I don't think it's something you just pop off. I think it's a process.
Yeah.
And it's a layered, like makeup prosthetic to where I'm going to unlayer this. And there's some things to where I will always have somewhat of a mask. Like it's just, you know what? I need this for my own sanity. Like a good one I give is my children crowding me. I cannot always insist on having my space to myself alone 100% of the time. I need to put on like the full torso suit of armor to say, all right, girls, I love you. And I love you enough to kind of balance my own autistic attribute for needing space to let you all jump on me unpredictably and pull my hair. And then that's fine. Like I can be okay. But there's others to where, like you mentioned professionally, like at what point do you just be you without one first overthinking and rethinking your primary response, or then thinking, okay, how am I perceiving this? Do I need to apologize? Like, there's always that unspooling thought, either as a preventative measure or as a like an apologetic measure, you know. So, you know, stereotypes aside, but I too feel like I have to apologize if I felt like I was too blunt, and I remember doing that more often. So then the inverse is like, just pause, find and finesse. But then I found like I was pausing and trying to script a certain response. These days though, man, I'll tell you, sometimes it's just, I'll answer an email with yes, and that's it, or no.
Yeah.
Like, hey, are we able to do this? No.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's like, if you think I'm rude, I won't do it to a stranger, but if it's somebody I know and I've met with them, it's like a really quick process to where I don't have to be less of my autistic self. I can just kind of briskly say, you know, we can look into it. And then other times it's like, I don't know this person, but let me just kind of write how I would. Or my favorite, when somebody does like a Slack chat or whatever and just says hi or good morning, I don't play. I just don't. It's like, you didn't ask me a question.
Yeah.
You know, like there are times, and if it comes back, it's like, listen, I've said hi and I've waved and I've said good morning and they keep walking. If I really needed something, I would stop and say, hey, Chris, hey, Jacob, hey, Jennifer. Like, so I'm kind of just like being more comfortable as myself, and people have respected. I don't get much out of Hunter if I try to small talk.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have the time or the bandwidth for the social dance. But if I say, hey, Hunter, do we have an update on XYZ? Bam, right away. So it's like, I can lay those breadcrumbs to say, hey, I don't have to. Like, somebody did that, and I almost wanted to just say, can you just ask me your question? I'm tired of telling you how my day was. Thanks for asking about my kids, but I know why you're chatting me out of the blue. Yeah. Just tell me what's up. So I, but it's true. And I think it's more of a, like, it's that slight bit, like I can peel the prosthetic off, and it's like, you know what? I need to succeed, and I need to fail being totally me. And I need to live with that. And if I have to apologize for when I went too far, which I did. I did in a meeting, and I was like, hey, I leaned into being extremely blunt on this unnecessarily.
Yeah.
My apologies. You know, this actually dictated more of a pause. And then I don't look at it as like an autistic thing. Then I don't feel bad. I feel like, you know what? I was just being savage. And sometimes I am. But then there's times where it's like I'm emotionally neutral, and I want to just be as quick and brisk as possible without without the perception. That's another, I think, again, when if I think of companies, social, corporate stuff, the example I used was, you get invited to some kid's birthday party. What do you say? If you say no, it's like, oops, that's your former friend there. And it's like, so there's another bit of like, don't put people in these impossible situations. Like, you can learn. We have to learn and say, I luckily people know better. It's like,
Oh, man. I had this experience like 2 weeks ago, like what you talked about when people ask about your kids, and it just makes me laugh. Like, I you know, go into work, and somebody I work with who I hadn't seen in a couple weeks, you know, she's just like, oh, how's your daughter? And then, of course, like 10 minutes later, I'm telling her every detail of what we did all week. And then I look at her face and I realize, oh, I was supposed to just say good.
Good. See? Come on, Ryan. You forgot your lines, man. You know,
like, I'm just like, and it's it's funny because I feel like I almost want to like hand everybody at work like a little card with like, if you ask me about my week or my kid or like how I've been, like, I'm going to talk until you walk away. So, you know, you can just nod. Just nod and smile, or just say hi.
Yes.
Because like, if you just say something... hi, I can just say hi back.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to listen to me ramble at you for 20 minutes.
That's one of the, like, you were, I'm assuming you work in person with like other people in proximity. Yeah. Like, I just, even the whole like small up, head up nod, like, you know, it's like, if I'm ever in person, I usually have my earbuds in. I take my glasses off because I'm nearsighted. So I have that plausible deniability.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't see you. I left my glasses at my cube, you know. It's like, but that's, so I want to ask you about this, because I have, you know, going back to just the blog, my most popular post that actually is like, it has a certain domain authority by Google now, is working for an autistic boss.
Okay.
Like if you search for autism boss, autistic boss, mine is the top hit. Yeah, oh, cool. That's one. My second is autism and oversharing. And okay. I have not come to the point where I want to do a video about it because I don't feel it's a good video topic. I just don't know how to go about it. Yeah. But it makes me think, like, why do you think it's more of an autistic predilection to just, like, quote unquote, overshare? Like, why do you think we do that?
I've never thought about it, but like the first thing that pops into my head is like, if I hear the words, how's your daughter? I just assume you actually are interested in hearing about how she is.
Yeah.
Whereas in reality,
talking.
You're just being pleasant. You're just filling space with to you asking how my daughter is the equivalent of just saying hello. But hang on, it froze for a sec. Okay. Yeah. But like to me, it's very different. It's like saying hello is saying hello. Yeah. Asking how my daughter is like you're expressing an interest in something that is my favorite subject. So now I want to tell you all about it. And I want to tell you about all the crafts we made this week and the hike we went on and the movie we watched and how she helped me make cupcakes for the family or all this stuff. And I'm just going to fill because it's so I think it's like, I mean, it just comes down to it. This is just what pops into my head right away is like just the language is it. If you ask me how my daughter is, I just take that as like you actually wanting to know. Whereas you're using that as just a filler greeting, small talk, like you only want it. You want me to just say, oh, she's great. Like, but yeah, I don't know. This happens not it's just on like, that's, it happens on any subject. If you ask me about anything,
you're weak.
I'm going to tell you about it because I think you want to know, but by the look on your face, I'm going to realize you don't actually want to know.
It's like, it's almost like there's an unspoken convention. I almost want to, I'm not gifted in art, but others are. And I want to be able to like get, I need to write that one down. Like, hold on. Like I'm literally writing this down. NT ways to say hello. And then how was your weekend? Okay. All right. I got to write that down because it's so good. But like writing like a little list of like how neurotypicals say hello. Hi. Hello. How was your weekend? How are you? Like all these kinds of questions. Yeah. Like how are your daughters? Yeah. You know, how'd you have fun last week? You know, that really aren't hello, but they are equivalent to like, these are the small micro transactions. When I ask you this, the appropriate responses are, good, great, she's fine, awesome, how's yours? Oh, she's doing good, okay, thanks, rather than just hey. And I almost wonder whether that's a certain like paranoia or fear from neurotypical people who don't want to be perceived as like they want to elicit or like leave a breadcrumb that they know a little bit about you so that you don't feel like you're not somebody that they like they care about you a little, but not enough to hear attention. And so I almost wonder like that dance is actually
it's
different, but it's like, if I ask, hey man, how are your kid? Like there's one manager who I had to use every trick in the book who he never mentioned his wife's name or his kids' names, but he did once. And I had to come up with an acronym to remember it with an image. And I won't repeat it because I want to protect that, but I will ask something like so-and-so was in this grade and I'll, you know, cause he mentions all the stuff he does. He just never mentions their name. So like even, so some people are just protective or it's like, hey, I'm guarded about it to where, you know, we just don't talk about our families. I wonder that may be changing, but like when I ask, hey, how was your weekend? I genuinely want to know because I like hearing stories. I like learning about people and I like when they give me a lot of ammo to make my next conversation easier.
Yes.
Well, we have a major renovation going and it's like, I can tell you, I may not care so much about your reno for the next 5 minutes, but that's going to be like the next thing I can say, hey, so that kitchen you were talking about, did you end up fixing that? Like that makes it easier for me to where I just basically spin and let the momentum of that wheel take off. And like, I like that. Yeah. Like, that's why I ask, you know, like, hey, you know, and it's, and so in a way it's almost like I'm asking because I do care versus being asked by someone who doesn't care. It's an interesting dynamic, but I think you hit part of the
what's that?
No, I was gonna let you run with that thought because
I find that is so it's such a I'm finding a lot of this sort of theme with like neurotypical neurodiversity where like a lot of times the one will appear to be something and be the not be that, but on this side it'll actually be that but appear not to be.
Not to
that
be.
Makes sense. Yeah. And I find that and then you've also got me thinking about like the people I work with, like I don't generally ask them about their kids or their, I just say hi. And then I think, well, maybe am I being perceived like I don't care about their lives, but I also just figure if anything interesting happened, they'll just tell me about it. Like it doesn't come naturally for me to walk into work and I'm already thinking about work. So I'm getting into work mode. And I feel like if I ask you about your kids, because when I ask, I really want to know, which means I'm expecting like a 5 or 10 minute answer, but I don't have time for that. So now I'm just going to say hello and get into work, figuring at some point if we're having a break or something and we'll just end up chatting. But it's like, I sometimes have to like remind myself when I see somebody to go, oh yes, this is the part where you're supposed to ask them about something. You're supposed to, you're supposed to say, think of like
run, to say, run through what you know about them. How was your weekend? Tuesday. This, you like, asked me that Monday.
Have this sort of list of things you know about them, scroll down visually in your brain and then like pick something on the list and go, what's up with that thing? Oh, are you, I know you like to work out. Is your gym open again? Like, are you back in the gym or, you know, how's your,
and then there's like, what's the right question to ask is the other one. Like, I'm always so afraid, like, you know, I know you like to work out. How are your deltoids? You know, it's like, how are your traps doing, buddy? So it's like, if you don't know enough about it, you want to show that you care. Or like the one I'm always dreading is asking about a family member or something who is like, oh no, we divorced, or oh no, and it's like, oh dang it, like I don't. So but it, when you mention, like when you go in and say hi, it's because it's not because you don't care, it's that you're not going to stop and pretend to care until you do and can make an investment in it. Like I'm not just gonna casually ask, hey, how was your weekend? How's this gig been treating you? Like, we're very specific about it because I think our autistic default is literal and honest. We don't really have a lot of like, you know, hidden agenda. And I don't think we can manage that well enough to try.
Yeah.
You know, so there's, and like, I think for me, you know, like what you mentioned, if I need to fill the void and get somebody going, there's a lot of things to do it, but if I need to get going, but I still need to be courteous, it's a quick nod, quick wave, head up, you know, hey, so-and-so, if I remember their name, usually just, hey, morning, and then just keep going. That's why I like to walk fast, because then they know, hey, I'm trying to go somewhere, I can't be stopped. If somebody says something, then it's like, oh, I have a drink, and I can't break hard enough.
Yeah.
I do have to ask you about this, though, because I mentioned, you know, we're both in North America. Yeah. I have mentioned this, and I think there's a part of it that is also cultural, where I forget whether it was a Russian or other Eastern European commentator who talked about how it's like, it is almost intentionally set up like that, to where we don't bring up the family subject as a way of greeting. Like, it's very transactional. It's
in there, in formal, that, and sorry, it cut out operate. For a second there. It cut out for a second there. Sorry, so can you start over on that?
Sure can. Yeah. So I think, so I got a commenter from, we're talking about like, you know, understated or unstated cultural and social expectations. Yeah. And, you know, obviously we come at it from a North American approach, you know, mine's obviously stateside, but I think it was somebody either in Russia or another Eastern European country who mentioned that culturally speaking, that's not a challenge. Like, just as a matter of culture, you don't ask like about their family in passing because it's considered rude or prying. So they're like, I actually evade a lot of these small talk questions because, you know, here in, you know, Russia or wherever, That's just not something we do unless we're engaged in a different social setting, like non-work, to where, hey, I can ask about kids. So I'm, you know, obviously I don't want to infer or, you know, like get it wrong, but even the differences you've noticed in like American and Canadian stereotypes of like the social transactions, do you find that, you know, do you find that it would be different here in America versus, you know, in Canada? Are there things that are just a little more like private that, hey, help you kind of be a little better autistic versus maybe a more open culture like in Latin America, to where you're just talking about everything and you kind of have to just stop and have to talk to whoever on the street and open up. So I'm curious if you had any thoughts on that from your standpoint.
Yeah, I don't know that I know enough about, like, you know, Latin American cultures or anything like that to really understand the difference. As far as Canada and the States go, I mean, I think we're close enough culturally that, I mean, Canada's, you know, it's about a tenth of the population. So much of our media is American. You know, like we're watching
a lot of places, man.
Like we're watching all the same shows and we have the same movie. Like it's all we have some, you know, Canadian stuff as well. But I mean, so many of the cultural reference points are going to be so the same, if not really similar. I don't know. I think in general, I mean, you know, I have a general perception that Americans tend to be more blunt and Canadians tend to be a little more like, Canadians are, I mean, we're known for our politeness.
Yeah.
But
I've noticed
to me, like that politeness so much of the time is not what I consider polite. It's like actually rude. But it's perceived as polite, which speaks to that kind of like topsy turviness of it all, where I think there's a lot of politeness just really means not saying what you actually mean or feel or think.
Ooh, interesting.
So I find that it can be, difficult, I guess, because like I kind of sometimes I'm just like, would everybody just fucking say what you actually think, please? Like, but I don't know. I mean, I imagine what are your thoughts on that? I imagine the
state. No, that's like that's a good one. I mentioned, cause when you said, you know, forgive me for saying this, I think you said like, sorry, three times in one phrase. I have a good friend who is also from Toronto, lives in Singapore now, but he, like, it's almost a recurring gag. Like you literally reinforce this, Matt, like you say sorry so often.
Yeah.
It's just like, I, you know, like, again, it's a cliche, but like, I never thought about it from the aspect of when you are really trying to interpret truth through polite obfuscation, how challenging that can be. And I think that's, hang on, I'm cutting out. Sorry, I'm catching back up here.
Okay.
Zoom's giving me the internet connection is unstable. So just like me, I can be unstable. So I think there's like some interesting cultural aspects that make it really challenging in the autistic experience. Like if you come from a more, you know, direct culture, then that may help in a lot of other like transactional elements. Like if I did work in Russia or Eastern Europe, to where it's the, like maybe the work culture is more direct, like I might thrive in that, you know, maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't, but, you know, knowing like, hey, I can just kind of keep it brisk. I can operate, come in, do my job, and that's fine. I can give honest, constructive feedback and it's appreciated rather than mealy mouth because I'm trying to mollify and, you know, paper over some stuff. But I can also see in, hang on one second, give me like a second real quick here. Okay, I think I'm all right. So trying to compete with bandwidth between my daughters, so gotta shut down Kogoma. But I think in another aspect, to where if I, you know, if I'm trying to be more expressive or pursue a certain kind of curiosity, then in cultures to where it is a little more closed, that can be difficult. Or, you know, like I gave an example to where if I have to make small talk with like a shopkeeper, or even if I know, hey, this is where I unspool, it might be in a social setting that's really stressful. And it's like, oh, they expect to just go for, like go for hours just talking at a party. And it's like, I don't know if I could do that. Yeah. The closest example I had is when, in Paris, actually, I enjoyed dining in Paris because who doesn't? But you know, what I did enjoy was that the service that you get, they basically just leave you alone.
Yeah.
And that's kind of nice. And I realized, like, as much as I enjoyed the American trappings of having a server kind of come back, hover and take over stuff, you know, I'd always dread a little bit of the small talk or being asked how my food was while I was eating.
Yeah.
But in Paris, it's like, I miss out on, you know, some of the fun conversations that I would have, you know, having my drink refilled and topped off and all that stuff. But it was nice to be like well and truly left alone. So it's just even interesting to find, like, you know, being autistic, you're going to be a product of whatever culture you're in and probably have just different friction points.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think, like, if our family gatherings, I just, like, some families, even in different regions, it's like you show up and dinner lasts from 4 p.m. to midnight. Like, I don't have the energy for that. Like, I'm in bed by like 8. So, like, I look at that, and it's hard because then other families expect you to just hang out at their house forever and stay for hours. And it's like, I just can't, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was just like, I like, so there's some elements to where it's okay, but then others to where it really, but that politeness thing you mentioned, like, that's, especially if I'm trying to really get to, like, I need you to just be specific here.
Yeah.
You know, that's gotta be an interesting headwind, if anything.
It is. It's funny, like, being Canadian, we don't hear ourselves say sorry. Like, it just, it comes out like an or a, you know, a filler word. Like, we just, it just, we say it so much. We don't even hear it anymore. It's like only talking to someone from somewhere else. Like, you just said sorry 17 times. Like, cool.
Yeah.
It's funny, man, talking about dining. Like, I
it's like one of those, you don't.
What's that?
No. Go on for the dining thing. I'm curious now.
It made me laugh about leaving alone part, because I've my whole life, I've done this so much, and it's only like recently I've understood it, but like, I like eating alone. I like going out and eating alone. I've always loved going out to like a pub or a restaurant, sitting at the bar, eating alone. And I'll sometimes order the entire meal at the beginning. Like, I'll say to the person, I'm going to have 3 beers. I'm going to have a Maker's Mark. It's like, I want to order this for an appetizer. I'm going to have this for a meal. I want a pint of this. And then I'm going to have 2 more of those pints after my meal. I'm going to have a Maker's Mark with 1 ice cube. I'll order the whole thing at once. I'll be like, you don't need to ask me what I want. This is what I want. And at the end, after, when you've given me my 3rd beer, you can just leave the bill. So it's just like, I've just set up the whole situation where they don't need to come every 5 minutes and ask me, are you okay? How's the food? Do you need another beer? Do you want this? Do you want that? I just go, I'm laying it all out for you. Here it is. I know exactly what's going to happen. I don't need to interact with you. I can do my crossword puzzle. And then at the end, I'll just give you your money. And it's like, that to me, it's like, that to me is like, sometimes like the relax, that's the, what I need to relax and have fun. And it's like, you know, I hope that is makes the job easier for that person, but sometimes they think that's kind of weird.
So that's just it, right? So for me, that's like autistic brain 101, to where, like, I delight in being able to articulate all of the steps at once. I'm sure as you're queuing for something, like, going back to Paris really quick.
Yeah.
The way I would practice and negotiate around, like, the anxiety of, like, oh my God, I can't understand the French, but I can get the cadence of the question. So I was at Monoprix, got a shirt there. And yes, I dared buy something, a shirt that, let's just say, a French large is not an American.
No,
it's not an American medium, right? No, so it fits me until I raise my hand and then show my navel, and then it's embarrassing. Yeah. You know? So it's like, okay, like, what is it with you short torsoed French men? I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So I was like in line waiting to hear the cadence of questions.
Yes.
Will that be all free today? Would you like a bag? Do you need, like, and just trying to predict, what is she going to ask? Because I knew I could do one of two things. I could do prime autistic things. I like this. No, I don't need a bag. Yes, I'm set. But then I realized, like, maybe in France and in Paris, that's really rude if I front load all of that.
Yeah,
I had no idea. So I just had to brace. Like, if they asked a question that used the words, I could say, you know, no, like, I don't need a sack, like, you know, or like show that I had a bag or I'm stuffing it in, or like, doing all this stuff. But like, I do that in the States. Like, if somebody's asking, I almost want there to be more appreciation for it. So that someone's like, you know, do you need a receipt? Do you need blah, blah, blah? Do you need stamps? So sometimes I'd go up and just say, you know, hey, this will be all, I don't need stamps for today, you know, and yes, this is confirmed to this zip code. And
yeah,
but you're right about the weirdness thing. Like, where you think you're doing people a favor, it comes down to like the neurotypical steps. For me to be in my motions, I just want you to answer these things in order. Whereas with autism, we're thinking, I can complete all these steps for you in one transaction. Yeah. And like the fact that you mentioned like three beers at different times, Maker's Mark, single ice cube, like that's just, I don't drink, but if I did, that's the kind of way I would script it out.
Yeah.
But then I'd be afraid to do it, because then it's like, what if they just give me a look and realize, like, you know, it's actually easier for me to just go on my route and do this. And then, but I like that style though. And I wish I could die.
It's funny. Like, do it. Yeah. But it's funny. Like, sometimes it sometimes works well, but I have noticed occasionally they take it as like you're being rude or something.
No,
but it's like, I'm not trying to be rude. I just want what I want.
And I think that's where, kind of going back to just kind of being autistic in your own culture and negotiating that stuff. Like, sometimes it's okay to play along, and sometimes it's just like, you know what? I want to be clever and I want to be me and I want to do this so that I can avoid the, the process of just being interrupted when I just want to. Just want to have a beer. I just want to do my crosswords. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned eating alone. That actually gives me severe anxiety. Wish I could do it. I wish I could do it better. I've done it when I need to, if I'm on a business trip and I don't feel like asking to go with anybody, or it just doesn't happen. It's like, well, I need to eat. And I don't want to go bring a steak to my room, you know? Like, so, but then it's like, what do you do? Like, I guess maybe I should get into crosswords, but I feel like that's the whole, now I feel like people are staring at me. What if my food's not here? Do I just look at people? Let me take my glasses off. Okay, I can't tell if they're looking at me. So there's like a level of, like, I can eat alone with nobody else around. But I think it's more of like, and this is where it's neurodivergence is just different. There's some stuff that stokes dread in people. Like, even going back earlier, like people just talking about their experience, or like video stuff. People are like, I don't know how you look so comfortable. I'm like, I did this for a decade. I don't struggle with it. But other people do. And
that's the same
with kind of embracing me, like, the.
Yeah. No, sorry. No, it's the same. Like I, for years I made music and I toured, I had a music group and I performed on stage. And it's like, I have no problem. Like, I can get up on stage with a microphone in front of 1,000 people, and like, I have no problem doing that. But like, you know, if I'm having dinner with 6 people, I'm like sweating. You know what I mean?
I've heard that from like a lot of, even, I think the dynamics of that are different. And I hear that so much, to where I'm not challenging you, but what I hear from like other people, like when, so my company sometimes will fly everybody in for a large summit, and everybody likes to say, oh, I'm an introvert. Oh, I'm an introvert too. And I'm like, y'all cannot all be introverts. Yeah. Shut up. Yeah, y'all are hamming it up. And I realized, like, this is where, obviously you know, kind of coming to the diagnosis later. And, you know, I feel like 16 was too late for me, but you start to slice a little bit of like, what part of this is just human? What part of this is autism? Mm-hmm. And what part of this is just me? And you look at, like, do I like spicy Korean foods because people do? I guess if you're a spicy Korean, you like spicy Korean foods, or, you know, maybe, you know, Korean, that's your cultural palate. Is it an autism thing? I don't know. Is there a certain tolerance that we have? So it's like we analyze this stuff, but I'm glad you brought up your musical days. Cause like, I was thinking as I was rehearsing this, one of my best buddies, Chris, has a very era specific encyclopedic knowledge of like rap and hip hop, but his era is more like 1999 to 2005, or it's like somewhere in there. So it's not early 90s, but I was like, you know, I gotta ask Ryan about this. But how
that's like, funny, because my era is like late 80s to mid 90s.
So that's
I have
it.
That like, same thing. I've got that like encyclopedic knowledge of hip hop in that era. Like I used to just open up the album covers and like memorize everything as I was listening to the records, and and just knowing all these like obscure 12 inches, like these obscure groups that only released one single in like 1991 and were never heard from again. And like, I know that song inside and out, like it's memorized. It's like crazy, you know? Yeah.
And that's like, so it brings me, there's another YouTuber, Indie Andy, who his thing is like, not his only thing, but one of his special interests is Pokemon.
Okay.
And I find that it's interesting because I can't talk about Pokemon on my channel. It's not something I'm going to go do a whole episode on. It has some stories, but it's one of those weird intersections between general interest with a special interest folded in. So when I talked to Indie Andy, I was like, everybody's into Pokemon, but my thing was like early age. I remember watching it as a TV show before I knew it was an anime. And like, I didn't realize it was not originally American because I was young and stupid. But just going into like, I got into like the Japanese card scene, which was super like ultra niche back then. So it's like taking like what was a broad interest, and it's like, well, I took like the special interest version of this, like Star Wars. Like, you like Star Wars. Like, I know, I was just thinking like, I like Star Wars too. I like, you know, I know, like knowing that the name of the monster in Jabba's palace is a Rancor. I know his trainer was named Malakili. And it's like, okay, hold on, you're weird now. Cause it's like, people like Star Wars. So how did that intersection work for you to where like rap and hip hop, dude, that's an interest and it's a cool one. Like, you can actually garner like, you know, a lot of good social capital with it. But then when you mentioned encyclopedic stuff, that probably puts you at like it probably gave you a tribe.
Yeah.
Like a 100% kind of click and tribe. I'd love to hear more about like your pre-enlightened autistic state as being like in the hip hop tribe. Like, I just want to know kind of like how you managed that, or where it helped maybe smooth over difference, but also helped align you with maybe some of your identity back then. I don't know. It just, it fascinates me, man.
Cool.
It just does.
God, I mean, this is, I'll attempt to keep it short. This is the kind of thing I could talk about for days.
Yeah, I figured.
But, yeah, I think when you talk about it being like a source of like social capital, that's totally part of it. Like, I can see that so clearly now looking back. When I was a kid, like I was, you know, identified as gifted, right? Like put into the gifted classes. That led to being bullied and being picked on at school. You know, like all the kids that hated the nerd kids. And I was, I was one of the nerd kids. So I found myself for like, you know, safety and security, started hanging out with a couple kids in my neighborhood, that were into like skateboarding and hip hop.
Yeah.
And I got really into both those two things. Now, I am severely uncoordinated. So any attempt at doing anything with my body is a joke. So the skateboarding side, I was just never going to be good. And I hung out with a group of guys who were, some of them were really, really good at skateboarding. And I was never going to be that. Like, I would fall down and just wipe out.
So you're kind of like Rodney Mullen, only the exact opposite back then.
Yeah.
Okay. See, like, I know one skateboarder. That's era specific. So
that's right. Yeah. So then I obviously I didn't consciously know any of this at the time, but like the hip hop side, I just got really into it. I think there was also like, the music to me, just the beats and the rhymes, like that combination of things just really touched my soul in a way that like it's still a huge part of my life now. And then I got into I started practicing, dabbling in the arts. So I was like, well, I'm never going to be able to break dance because I'm uncoordinated and I just can't do it. I mean, you know, I have dyspraxia too. So like my body's just like, I don't know where I am in space. Yep.
It's so, more breaking than dancing, basically.
Yeah. And then I got into like graffiti art, and I could do that. I had a good artistic talent. DJing, I could not do.
Yeah.
Because you have to coordinate like two different beats and mix them
together.
It's
like even wearing like the headphone over one ear and not the other. I'm like, that rules me out. And I can't play that game.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. Like you have to be able to listen to one beat with one ear and the other beat with the other ear and then match them up. And my brain
match them or like mixing on key. I'm like, what is a key? I can't even intuit that. Like, forget.
Yeah, but then the rapping side.
So, like, not like I tried, but it's just like I can empathize with like that's.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Cut out for a sec there.
Yeah, I'm here. Back. Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. So I got into rapping. I started rapping when I was a teenager, and I practiced, and I got really good at freestyling. I don't know if you know what that is.
I do.
Yeah. So I got really good at freestyling. So then when there's a party, and someone's DJing and playing beats, and a bunch of us that are into rapping are freestyling. Well, I did get social capital there by being a good freestyler. I became the best. Like I had to be, and I got to a point where I would go and like battle other rappers, and I never lost the battle. I just I refused to lose. I went into every battle like I'm going to have to like, I'm either going to win this or my bloody corpse is going to get dragged off. Like I'm never going to cede defeat to anyone. I'm just going to like be basically like the Viking berserker equivalent in a freestyle rapping. So I got into that. Viking, and then also
that's a good way to put it. So I'm just trying to imagine like, so this was when and where was this, like Toronto, like
This is like starting in the city I grew up in, which is a city called London, which is 2 hours from Toronto.
That's what I was asking, because I've heard from people from London, and I can never figure out whether they're talking London, UK, or London as in Ontario.
Yeah, Ontario.
Okay, because you'd mentioned that. I was like, this dude's not in the UK. Like, what the heck is all this? Like, Cory Doctorow's the same way. I'm like, okay, I'm figuring it out now. So, okay, this makes sense. So,
and it's funny because my journey in music, like I started in high school, then I had a rap group, and we were doing talent shows, and we were actually doing really well. And then, I started my own, like hip hop magazine that I started publishing in the '90s. And then I started promoting, concerts, like bringing artists from the States up to perform. And then I eventually started like getting into other stuff, like was writing for other magazines and then working for record companies and stuff like that. So it just led to this whole journey. So I think I still love it, and it's still part of who I am. But yeah, it is interesting to kind of notice that back in the day, like there was certainly some social capital attached to it. And it also was just giving me something to do. When I'm in a social space, if I don't have something to do, I'm very uncomfortable. I can't just stand around and talk to other people because that's like super not comfortable for me. But hey, throw some beats on and let's rap. Okay, now I have something to do, and I have something to practice and something to be good at and something to get recognized for. And then I feel like I'm participating in the social gathering.
Yes.
And I'm being seen in that place, and I'm part of it, but I have this thing to focus on, so I don't have to be like, jokes, funny, make each other laugh.
Yeah, all right. So like, it's one of those, like, this is one of those where like my dad and I, he doesn't talk about it, but I've kind of interpreted that where you don't want to feel like you're not there. Like who doesn't want to be at a party? Like I don't always, but you want to, like, especially if you're younger or, you know, you want some validation at some point, but you don't want to have to go through the same kind of motions because you just can't go up and make conversation. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm like rehashing this. I'm like, man, if there's a beat on, like, I don't even know what to do. Do I nod my head? Do I try to dance? And then I think you cracked it. You just start freestyling. And then at that point, you're in your own world, but you're still in that world.
Yeah.
And like, that's a kind of dynamic that I think is hard. And I almost wonder like whether there's a certain kind of, you know, like autistic bent to creators who do this. Like, I'd rather not be in the audience because I don't know how to be an audience participant.
Yeah.
I'd rather be on stage because then I feel like I'm surrounded by people, but I'm doing something.
Yeah.
For my dad, photography is his thing. And yeah. I don't know. And I almost wonder, like, did he do that just to be involved without having to be involved? Like, yeah. I'll just show up and take pictures. Like, he'd joke, yeah, I'll go help with this moving project. I'll take pictures while everybody's moving. But like, I look at it where it's almost like if you have a very focused purpose
yeah.
that does also intersect with passion and proficiency.
Yeah.
Like I may not look it, and I don't, and this is a joke, but like I don't mind actually helping people move furniture because yeah. for me, it's super practical. I love showing off that I can lift heavier things than I should. And it's very purposed. It's like, yeah. oh, there's a group thing, but like, I will always be moving something, you know? Yeah. And I know that's it's a dumb example, but yeah, like at parties, like a work summit, I was glad to have gotten like an urgent request from like a senior director. And I was like, I got to be in the middle of everything, but focused. I'm like, hey, I'd love to talk, but so-and-so needs this by end of day. And I have no idea how to do it. And, but I wouldn't want to do it alone. I still wanted to be part, but that's like, it's amazing how you drew that dichotomy there of like, you know, you're doing something and that's your thing. I just don't know how you braved it the first time where you could freestyle in front of people. Like that had to be something.
I don't know. I think desperation maybe.
Yeah. Like if I was desperate, it's like, I'm sorry. Nothing. The words would not come out. I used something called syllabic that didn't quite rhyme or have the same meter and get laughed at. And that's that.
I think
dragged off the stage.
That's I mean, I think like I had a couple other friends around me. We were all getting into it at the same time. We were all practicing. No one was good to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we were really terrible freestylers for a few years and we just slowly got better. And I think there's that camaraderie too. Cause like, I mean, you know, this is sort of all often said about like male friendships tend to be about activities, whereas female friendships tend to be about talking.
Yeah.
And I mean, I noticed this plain as day with like, weeks ago we had some neighbor kids over to the local Toboggan Hill and I was there with my daughter, and within seconds the girls had all gone off to like a big snow mountain and they were making that their princess castle, and they were okay, this room's going to be your room and this is your room, and they're like negotiating how to construct this imaginary world. And the boys were taking turns on their GT snow racers to see who could go further, you know, go faster and further. And it was like, this happened within 2 minutes of us all being there. And, you know, so, I mean, that's kind of a common male thing, but I think for me, like, you know, being male and being autistic, it was maybe amplified a little with those friendships were around, like around freestyling, around practicing this skill and doing this thing that we were all sharing in, and that became so important to me because I didn't know how to have friends, but now we have this thing we're doing. We'll get together. We'll practice this for a few hours. We'll all try to elevate each other and help each other get better. And then at the end, when it's done, like I feel closer to these people. I feel like I have friends. I feel like we have a bond. It's all around this activity, but it felt, you know, it was cool.
And that's like an interesting bit. I was, when you're talking about the snow castle thing, like I have very female friendships with my male friends. Like we will do the talking, we will, but it was born out of very similar passions of like, it was more work stuff, but we were all super motivated and super driven. And if we did not align so well on our skills, abilities, it would be competitive, but we all got the same kind of humor. So we'd all work on projects. We'd all do stuff. We'd play the same like apps. There was this thing called Billionaire on our phones and we would just like overdrive that and get looped into the same kind of stuff. We don't have a lot of similar activities. So I joke that our friendships have become more quote unquote feminine because all we do now is talk and just, you know, spit ideas. But it took, this is pre, you know, disclosure for me to them, but it took that kind of like, hey, we align on this activity. And that's kind of the bridge, you know, and that seems like it was really, really formative to you. Did you ever still feel different? Like, even though you were a little bit of an insider with all that skills, like, where did you feel your most outsidery even in that?
I mean, the only time I felt comfortable was when we were doing that activity. Like, we'd be at a party and there someone would be DJing beats and we'd be freestyling. And I felt pretty at home in that. As soon as that part of the night was done and we were back to socializing, then I was just lost. And I was just wandering from room to room in this party, trying to figure out how to be part of a conversation and never succeeding. And then
in there. You know,
I mean, I think always felt very outsidery in that sense. Like, and even within that group, like there were two guys in the group with me and we'd all get together and we'd practice and we would work on, cause we like wrote songs and we were trying to get in the studio and record songs. And even then, like I always felt even within the group of the three of us, I felt very much the outsider of that group. Like I felt like the two of them had a close friendship and a rapport and an ease with each other that I was not able to achieve with either of them. It was still better for me than anything else I had, but it still felt very like I was never relaxed around
it. It's like, it's funny. There's a symmetry to this. Cause I always find it's like, cause again, I have like two like best friends who, you know, they're my friends from work, but they come to visit. And sometimes when they're just chilling in my house, it's like, so and these are like my best friends too. I would be in there, I would be in one's wedding and I'd be in one's second wedding if it came to it, you know. But it's just more like, okay, what do we do? And you know, the other two will do stuff a little more naturally, and then it's like it's been like a source of great joy, but like if something goes amiss and then I feel weirded out and it's like I'm depressed. But then like as you're describing it, it's like I do a lot of freestyling with Ferg and Jerry, you know, and it helps branch out and like create that kind of bond. But there's sometimes just like, look, I'm an autistic dude. And sometimes it is just, I need a functional activity sometimes, or just like a certain mode, you know, to where like, hey, I can be comfortable when we're doing something. Hey, if like even younger, it's like, hey, I can build Legos with you and we can talk. But if you take the Legos away, it's like, so what's up? You know, it's like, what do we do now? Like, connects? No, connects are lame. Okay. Great. And that's, I think it's kind of where, like, I think, you know, this is an interesting, like, adult autistic friendships. Like, I think it's just knowing that there's got to be something. There's got to be, it can't just be to hang out. Like, it's got to be like, for me and my one other, you know, my other friend, Josh, it's like, I call it a mandate, like the one, you know, it's like, let's do tacos. And that is like the focal point of, okay, now I feel like I can bridge this because it's an activity and then I can branch off into more philosophical stuff. But if it's just to hang out aimlessly, he can hold a conversation with himself. He's good at that. But it's like, I still struggle with that. And this is somebody I've known for close to like two decades, it feels like. So, but it's just it's an interesting paradox of, my best friend is great when we're doing this. He's still my best friend when we're not. He's just different, you know, but it's nice that you find or can at least have that kind of understanding. But it's fascinating. I found, look back, man.
My best friend now, it's a really interesting thing happened a couple of months ago. Like we've been friends for years and years and years, and a lot of that time we've lived in different cities, like you can cross the country and not get to see each other too much. And sometimes we just wouldn't talk that often. And I've always like, I'd sometimes phone, but like I would feel awkward on the phone. Like I didn't know if he wanted to talk on the phone, and then I would be awkward. And then I would be trying to get off the phone because I didn't think he wanted to be on the phone. But then I was worried I'm being rude. Like he doesn't think I want to be on the phone. And it just was like, really, every time I talked to him, I felt super awkward. And then a few months back, I was kind of going through a bit of a difficult time. And I was talking to my coach who, and I was talking about like how I feel like I need my friends, but I'm not sure how to ask them to be my friends. And he was like, well, why don't you just ask them? It's like, just straight up, just say you need support right now and you need friendship and you need them to reach out. And so I sent a text to my buddy and I said, hey, can I call you? Like, when's a good time and talk? And I just explained to him, I said, I'm going through some stuff. I really feel like I need people I can talk to regularly. I would love that to be you. I said, I don't want to put any pressure on you. If that's not something that, that works for you, then don't feel obligated. I don't want. And then we decided to just do a weekly phone call.
Yeah.
So we talk every Tuesday.
Yeah.
And it's like been so amazing because we know we're going to talk every Tuesday.
Yeah.
We do. And then there's no pressure about what we need to talk about. It's not like and if you haven't spoken in months, it's like, oh my God, I got to catch up on everything. There's none of that. We're in tune with each other's lives because we've just gotten an update a week before. So we kind of know what's going on. Yeah. And then the phone call, sometimes it's like 10 minutes. Sometimes it's 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it can but it feels so relaxed now because we've defined it. We've scheduled it.
Yes.
We made it a regular thing. So yes. I know that he wants to talk to me on Tuesday. So I don't feel weird calling.
Yeah.
And then, it's defined. And then
you've got a structure there that clarifies it for you, and that's like, I'm curious, so even in this one, do you ever still text him out of cycle?
Yes.
See, that's the thing. Like, and it's one to where like it's that structure to where if there is something there, then I feel like, okay, like with Josh, right? Yeah. We don't go due to, the pandemic, we don't do Torchy's tacos, I'm overdue now. We don't do it every month, but it will occur. It has that unspoken cadence. But do I text him out of the blue? Does he hit me up? Do I join his Facebook lives when he's trying a grilling experiment inside his house? Like, there's still like, hey, this whole landscape. And I think the quote of like, I forget just the truth of, friends can talk every day or they don't, and that's okay. It's almost like an innateness of the structure, I think, helps you as an autistic person.
Yeah.
Like, then you can answer the questions of, they're still my friend. I know I'm different. They're different too. They're not going to be any less of my friend or more because of the frequency. And I think that's a struggle that, man, we're talking like when I do like graduate courses on, hey, now you're a thriving autistic person. How do you make and maintain friendships with other autistic people or otherwise without it seeming weird? And I think the frequency one is probably the biggest. I'm extremely routine. I get up early and I will send like a good morning chat in my work thing to my two buddies. But it's like, am I less of a friend if I don't?
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
And if they don't respond right away, they're not less of a friend. It's actually a tell just by dint of routine. If I don't say anything, they'll be like, dude, did you sleep in? Did you die? And that tells me, and it's like, did you die? But it's like, it tells me, you know what? Like, they know my patterns implicitly enough to where I'm not obligated to do it. And it's almost like they're concerned if I don't. And it's just that unspoken. That's like, I used to call it the F word, friends, and I still do. But it's true. And I think it's part of the joy of the human experience, but also the autistic human experience. Yeah. Like I tell people I've got a lot of acquaintances, but few friends, but they're all 100%. And I can appreciate that. Dude, I know we're winding up time, man. I want to know, one, first off, the new logo design thing. I don't know if it's new, but like that bluish yellow life autistic with Ryan Summers, like that just looks good. I'm like, that is just a good look. I love it. Curious on your plans for, world domination with this. Cause you have my word, man. I'm not a good podcast host and I'm delighted for the people who are going to search it and find a great podcast. And it's not going to be mine. I'm going to be a guest on one of them. So I really love that corner of the market is getting saturated with quality. But
I'm glad we got to talk. And it was obviously like, I think I first reached out to you via Instagram because I was like, oh, this is weird. Like, I'm doing this thing and I've called it this and you're called that. And it was like, is this awkward? Is this weird? Or are you mad at me? Or is this going to be an issue?
Awkward, weird, yes. Mad, no. Yeah, it's like, so, I was trying to take out Iowa PBS because they're the ones using that.
Like, which I didn't.
I was like, oh, I don't like their content. Sorry. And it's like, y'all could pick like a different name. And I think I out-index them now, which is good.
Good. But
Nah, dude, I'm just, like I said, yeah. You throw a, somebody clever enough to search for that deserves to find something clever in return.
Well, and yeah, I'm happy that they'll search for that and find you, which is awesome, because I love what you're doing. And I was happy to get that reply back of like, hey, yeah, awkward, yes, mad, no, we're good.
Yeah,
And I love what you're doing, and I'm glad we kind of got to talk. And yeah, I mean, for me, I'm recording a conversation every week now, and I'm just loving this process. I mean, like you kind of talked about earlier, like the numbers to me, I don't care about. Like, sure, it's exciting when I was like, oh my God, we have 10,000 downloads. Like,
yes,
that's small potatoes in the grand scheme of things. But for me, as like a guy who just started doing this at his kitchen table, like on his phone, I'm like, it's fun. And it's like, but the meaning in it is like those messages getting from people saying, hey, this is meaningful for me. And I'm like, that's really cool. It's the same way I felt about music. When I had my music career, I never had a hit. I never was big, but I had these little interactions. I had one show one time where this guy came up to me and he said, there was a certain song I had, and it was a song I wrote during a really tough period of depression. And this one guy came up to me and said, that song saved my life. I was suicidal. And when I heard that song, I knew somebody else knew what I was feeling. And I knew that you had gone through that feeling and come out of it. And that one guy, I mean, it sounds so trite, but it's true. That one guy saying that one thing to me that one time is the most important part of my entire music career. And I feel like with this podcast, it's the same. I love having these conversations. I love sharing them. I love the feedback. If it ever led to something where I was able to like do this for a living, like, sure, I would love that. But just because I love doing this so much, it's so exciting for me. And I do feel like I get the dual benefit of I get to enjoy it. And also I feel like it's doing good. And like those two things, if I could do that more, like it's a great feeling, but ultimately like I'm probably still going to be bartending for the rest of my life.
You know, hey man, like, you know, look, I might be, it's the same. And I think you hit two points of like doing, there's doing well and then there's doing good.
Yeah.
And I like to do both, but man, when you said like the thought just kind of clicked in, there's making a living, but then there's giving and saving lives, you know, giving life and saving life. Like when you, it's true. Let's just say you and I have very similar audience who say similar things. And it's like, sometimes it might not be the biggest flame, but that spark shoots off and it just sets somebody else ablaze. And like the fact that you link it to like, what if you did go viral and went big, but that moment got taken away from you to where that one person said, you know, was never there. And, you know, because you were too big and it didn't speak to them. And Ryan, I'm still reckoning with that myself. Like do I want to be viral?
Shit's blowing up, yo.
Well, you know what? It's just steady along. But like you said, weekly conversations for me, this is just what I do now. It's a weekly thing. I love the ideas and it just has the effect of, I appreciate my audience and I'm glad that it resonates and that it gives life and it does good. Even if I'm not making a living and doing well, like that is a great fringe benefit if and when it happens. But in the interim, you know, touching lives is quite the enterprise. I don't know why that's the autistic advocacy enterprise.
I'm
delighted to share in that with you.
And I think everybody, like people like me, like you, like other people doing things in this space, everyone's got their own take, their own approach.
Yeah.
For me, like, I'm just drawn to this like long form one-on-one conversation. Like that's my bread and butter. That's what I like doing. Other people, see the people that do like these short edited cool videos and I'm like, those are great. I love them. It's just not what I'll ever do. And like, I love what you do. I love watching your videos, but I look at them.
I can't do an interview over 2 hours, man. Like it's just,
You just did.
I just did. I know. Like I had to bargain with the family. I'm like, I'll take the kids shopping. I'll do this. We'll get the house clean. But I know what you mean. Like it's just videos are work, but it's a tightly compressed. And if I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't do it. And just like this, I've enjoyed being a guest though. People hit me up for this, but I have a lot of respect for those who are good conversational brokers. I'm not, but I love when people practice that craft and make a good conversation out of it.
Yeah. Well, so, I appreciate, I thank you for doing this. And I appreciate like you're really good at articulating around this stuff. You know, I kept some notes and the things I wrote down, nice. Like just little quotes that I just think are really helpful. And you got a really good grip on the subject, and I appreciate your time, man. So thanks so much.
Appreciate you having me, man. So, yeah. And on a Saturday too. So like I'm not in my office on a weekend, but I love how the life autistic meets the life autistic.
I know. So, it's awesome.
Good stuff. But all hey, right, man, thanks, I'm brother. Legit. Absolutely, yeah. Dude. You take care.
I hope we can do this again one day. And again, thanks for your time, brother.
Hey, man. Thank you so much. Cheers. Right.
Cheers.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.